Welcome to The Medium, a podcast presented by Tommy Media that's all about what's happening in the art and entertainment world. On today's show, we talk with St. Thomas students Nate and Izzy Iliff about their self-published online novels. We will also be catching up with the latest news in the arts and entertainment and play some supernatural trivia.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from KUST Campus Radio, a student-operated, non-commercial radio station. KUST provides students and faculty of St. Thomas a platform dedicated to creative storytelling, diverse viewpoints, and exploring a vast array of audio content. Tune in anytime to KUST at mixler.com/KUST-radio.
All right. Today on our show, we have two self-published authors, brother and sister, Nate and Izzy Iliff. Can you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Izzy. I'm a junior here at St. Thomas, and I'm currently planning to be an English major. Kind of need to decide right about now.
But represent.
And I kind of started writing my book, Shield Maiden, when I was, I think, 10th grade of high school. Yeah, and then soon after, Nate decided he wanted to get going on writing, too. So that's kind of how this all started.
Yeah, so I'm Nate. I'm a freshman here at St. Thomas. I haven't officially declared any majors yet, but I'm thinking of doing something in music. Yeah, I started writing probably about 4 or 5 years ago, I think when I was like 13, and just kind of kept with it since.
It's fantastic. Cool. Yeah.
So, Izzy, you wrote Shield Maiden, and Nate, you have Cerealis. Now, these are a combined world, essentially, but separate novels, correct?
Exactly. So, kind of what happened was I started writing Shield Maiden because I was just, like, always a book nerd. Like, I would just, like, read so much stuff. And I just wanted, I don't know, like, even where the idea came from. It just kind of came to me, and I just started writing this novel. And then Nate started writing Cerealis because he was like, oh, cool, like, I want to write fantasy too, kind of out of nowhere. And then, I don't know, somewhere along the line we decided it would be cool that they would be both set in the same fantasy world. And that's where the world of Erebos came from. So, yeah.
Can you guys give a brief little summary about what each of them are about?
Should I go first?
Sure, go for it.
So, Shield Maiden, basically, the main character, Elise Rome, has this magical power to heal, and so for 2 years she's been enslaved basically by this rival kingdom, and they've been using her to like heal all their people back from war and everything, and then one day she escapes and kind of is on the run from the kingdom that enslaved her. There's this crazy sorcerer who wants her dead, and then she starts realizing that her powers are kind of part of this bigger magic struggle that she never even knew existed. So
fascinating. Wow.
So Cerealis is about a 15-year-old boy. His name's Adrian. And he is a member of the King's Army. And on his first battle ever, he is kidnapped by the enemy and kind of thrust into this intense civil war between the King's Army and the Army of the Raven. But as the story goes on, he starts to uncover some dark secrets about the king's lineage, and he starts to realize that his own family lineage is somehow closely tied to the royal family in ways that he had never known.
Fascinating. Guys, I have so much respect for authors, specifically because it's very difficult to stay so motivated for such a long time and to have that creative juice. Like, it's unique, original. And I have a lot of respect for that. Can you guys tell me where this idea came from? It sounds like Izzy kind of started it, but it snowballed. And Nate, you came in, you built a lot as well. Can you guys tell me like where you got that inspiration? What keeps you motivated to keep building that world?
Well, for me, I've just always read a lot of fantasy. It's basically my favorite genre. And I don't remember exactly. Shield Maiden came up. I was just like lying in bed one night, and that's always where I get my ideas because it's like the only time I'm not doing something else. And I just remember thinking like this little like poem type thing came into my head, and it was like, my name is Elise Rome. I am of this kingdom. No, what was it? I live in this kingdom, but it is not my kingdom. I live among these people, but they are not my people. I bow my head, but I do not submit. And I was like, what the heck is this? Like, it literally just came into my head. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to write a story out of this. And then I just spent, like, so many years on it because I had no idea where it was going, and it just kept changing as I went. But that was pretty much it for me, so.
I feel like that's how it always starts. You get it's one tiny little inkling.
And just spirals.
And you're like, oh, shoot, yeah. I got to do a whole thing just on this. Nate, what about you?
Well, for me, it's basically the same story, kind of a different beginning, but I was actually listening to an Imagine Dragons song one day. It's Time.
Oh, I love that.
And there's the line, giving the Academy a rain check. And, like, I don't know what it's about in the song, but just, like, this image that I got in my mind was, like, a fantasy world, and there's like this academy where they're like training soldiers and stuff, and that kind of started the whole story. And I mean, at this point, it's kind of spiraled from there, and edits and revisions, like, I completely scrapped the original storyline and it's completely different now, but that was like kind of the starting moment for me that started the entire journey from there. So
can you go ahead.
In regard to then writing, what is the writing process like for you guys? Because you were just saying you edit revisions over and over. How does that typically go for you guys?
Well, for me, I've definitely changed as a writer so much since I started this in 10th grade. When I first started writing, it was just like, ooh, let's see what happens. Let's just write and kind of like come up with the plot as I go. And I used to always try to write stories like that, and I'd just get bored so quickly. I'd write like 5 to 10 pages and be like, okay, I have no more ideas. So I think I wrote an entire first draft of Shield Maiden, and it was probably about 55, 60,000 words, just like kind of pantsing it and going, like coming up with the plot as I went, which is very unlike me. Like, I'm a very type A personality, so that was kind of a different process. But then I guess over time, like, I probably rewrote the entire book twice to get to the draft that we ended up putting out. And I really became more of a plotter. Like, once we decided, me and Nate, that we wanted the worlds to be joined, we kind of had to come up with, like, how is the magic system going to work? Like, what rules do we have that we're not really showing the reader, but we know exist so that we can make the systems consistent? And so I really kind of went back and, like, I have a OneNote document that's like, here's all the events that need to happen in this book. And then I would kind of write the scenes more freeform. Like, I would kind of let them unfold however, but I knew, like, hey, this guy needs to get killed right here or something. So, yeah, that was pretty much it for me.
What about your writing process, Nate?
Well, I tend to think faster than I can write. So what tends to happen for me is I have a plan for several books ahead of what I've physically written. So I think right about now I've probably like planned roughly like 15 books ahead of where I am. Like, not, it's not fully fleshed out.
Sure.
It's just like, then at the end of the 14th book, this is what's going to happen.
Sure.
And then I kind of, when I'm writing, I kind of just kind of see where it goes, and then if I have to go back and, you know, add a little evidence to a twist or something that's going to come down the line, then I do that. But other than that, it's just kind of like I have like general targets of where I want to be, and then I just kind of see how I get there.
I thought it was, I believe it was J.K. Rowling who famously wrote like the last page or the last chapter
she knew how it was gonna end
of Harry Potter while she was writing the first book. So I find that process interesting, like kind of having two forgive the pun bookends and then filling in the middle.
Read why?
No, I'm so sorry. I find that that process interesting because I feel like I would work that way too, where I want to jump to the end, but I'm like, now I got to figure out how I got here, how I get there, you know. It's very interesting. Yeah,
it's pretty cool actually the way we've come together with stuff, because Nate's much more of like a creative right brain thinker, and I'm like very left brain, like do things in order, like make a plan, organize things. And so he really has a ton of ideas for like the broad, like here's what is going to happen. Like, he can keep track of so many characters and at once, and think of like, oh, this random guy that we introduced, like
in one paragraph, like he should come back and betray somebody or something crazy, which makes it so interesting. And then I really process things a lot more linearly and kind of like fit things together. So it really works well, surprisingly, for us to like team up on this.
It's pretty rare that you guys are not opposites, but able to complement each other in that way. What is your favorite aspect of crafting a story? Is it the plot or the characters? Because I know, Izzy, you said that it changed for you almost when you were writing. So what do you guys think?
I feel like you had an idea, so you start. Well,
it's kind of both for me. My favorite part, it's going to sound slightly sadistic, is killing off characters.
No. He really, like, he doesn't have the same emotional reaction. Like, I'm such a reader as a writer, so I'm, like, reading stuff. I'm like, oh, no, this poor character. Like, I get in there emotionally, and he looks at it like, wow, that author must have, like, thought this out so well. Such betrayal.
But, like, I have one character. I'm not going to say who because I don't want to spoil anything. But there's a character that we meet in book one who is written for the sole purpose of being killed off later in the series.
I'm assuming it would be the most emotional, dramatic death ever.
It's fairly emotional.
That's cool.
But, like, I don't know. That's the part that I've almost always loved, is like the twists and stuff like that, and like seeding little plot lines and stuff throughout the course of the story that when you first read them, you don't think anything of it. And then by the time you reach what the twist is and you look back, everything makes sense.
Everything's been previously laid out for you and you just haven't noticed. That is a great feeling in books, movies. I love that feeling. It takes a lot of effort. You have to be very careful, cautious, and intelligent. So I'm complimenting you, intelligent, to do that. So I applaud you for being able to do that, because that's one of my favorite aspects of a story too. It makes you want to go back and reread that story to try and figure out those hints, you know.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, I'd almost compare like what we're doing with our writing and like the crossover and stuff to like the Marvel movies and stuff, because it's that same sort of like, I mean, obviously the plot is very different, but it's the same sort of amount of thinking that has to go into it ahead of time for like the first movie in the series to have completely foreshadowed what's gonna happen in the last, you know?
Yeah, making a whole universe that goes together. And do your books allude to each other at all, at least right now, or not yet?
A little bit. There's definitely, I would say, like, obviously people are going to know, they go into the world of Erebos and it's like one world, two stories, mm-hmm. like look at the two books, here they are. So people know that they're in the same world, but like the way geographically that things are set up is it's like disparate continents and everything, and Nate's kingdoms and countries that make up his books are a lot bigger, mine are a lot smaller, and so we've kind of got this history set up where the two worlds almost haven't met each other yet, and so we do have like a little bit of crossover, and as people read more, they're gonna see like, oh, that character was from X of Nate's countries or whatever. But it's very, very subtle right now, I would say. Like, you wouldn't, if you read the two books separately, you probably wouldn't realize they were related if you didn't already know that.
Mm-hmm.
I love a good crossover. All right. I do have a question. I'm very curious about this. So you guys say you love fantasy books. I think that much is obviously implied, even before you told us that. But what books specifically like inspired you? Like, what titles kind of do you not go off of, but have in mind when you write?
I would have to say the number one for me is definitely The Lord of the Rings.
Interesting.
Just
okay.
Because, like, Tolkien, the amount of work that he put into crafting his world, and not just the story, but the world, and how much exists beyond the scope of like the three books, is kind of something that I've always kind of strived for, is to have like so much detail and so much immersion that your reader really feels like this is a real place that could have existed.
All right, great answer.
So for me, I would definitely credit Lord of the Rings as well. And we actually did like a literature study in high school, both of us, of the Lord of the Rings. So we really like went in deep on like how Tolkien crafted so much stuff. And that was for me, at least right at the time when I started writing Shield Maiden. I would also say that like my inspirations have changed over time. Like I remember when I was younger, I read, what was the series? Fablehaven by Brandon Mull. Okay. And that was probably a big inspiration at the time. Like now that I'm working on stuff, I'm really inspired by the Ember in the Ashes series by Sabaa Tahir. Like she is one of those writers in today's YA novels that, like, I wouldn't call her Tolkien level because he was just like a different creature. But like the kind of work and planning and like world building that she has created in her series is, again, like Nate was saying, definitely something that I aspire to. And I don't know, that's something that's a little bit harder for me because I tend to write very character based, but it's something that I've like come to really love the more you kind of dive into it. So
very cool. All right, well, we have one question. I think it's a fairly obvious question, but are there going to be sequels?
Yes
there are
going to
be 14 for
there's many sequels
in the works currently. I think Shield Maiden is going to be 5 books and Cerealis is going to be 5 books, and then there's going to be more that are not necessarily the same series, but it's the same world.
Have you started actually writing, or do you have like plot points, or how far along are you in the sequels?
Well, I'll let Nate answer for Cerealis, but we also definitely have started like plotting together, whereas like when I was starting Shield Maiden, I just kind of did most of the work. Now we're like sitting down and going like, oh, this is like the world, like this will be this book. I had written probably about 100 pages of Shield Maiden Book 2, and then I completely rewrote Shield Maiden Book 1, and nothing makes sense anymore, and all the characters in Book 2 have been scrapped. That was a fun pile of pages that will not be used. So I actually don't have anything written of the next books right now, but I do have a wall of sticky notes in my room that is plotting out the next 4 books. So we're making progress right now.
Great. What about, Nate?
I have...
Come on, he's got it through 15. Of course he has. I want to see a timeline of this whole thing.
Okay, there better be 14 manuscripts. I'm desperate now.
We have a OneNote notebook with like a million sections that I have organized because that is my role in this creative relationship. And we have a world timeline that starts far before our books start and continues far after with every possible event you could think of. So
we love
that does exist.
I think like physically written, I've got obviously the first book. I have technically a full second book written, but I'm going through like edits and scrapping a lot of stuff from that. And then I have like probably about like 20 or 30 pages from the third book and 20 or 30 pages from actually a prequel that I'm working on, because if I focus on one series for too long, I get bored of my main character, so I have to do something different.
I totally get it. All right, well, Nate, Izzy, thank you guys for coming in. We're going to link their website and their Instagram on the page that our podcast is posted on, so make sure to check that out. You guys, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. It was great.
Yeah, thank you. This was awesome.
All right. And now for what's happening in the news and the art and entertainment world. So for those of you who listened in to our last episode, we discussed how Sony and Disney had failed to reach a deal for Spider-Man to keep him in the MCU. Well, guess what? That deal, a new deal has emerged.
That conversation no longer matters.
Exactly. Woo. Solid.
That's great.
Week, 2 weeks after that.
Yep. Great timing on our part.
Great timing on our part. Yeah, it was an interesting discussion regardless.
Yeah.
Anyways, the two companies will work together to produce a third Spider-Man film set to release in July 2021. Spider-Man will be also featured in another MCU film, kind of as a not as a standalone character, but more as a supporting character.
Kind of like, what was he in the Avengers movies, right? Just as another character.
Yeah, just another character.
But not a titled Spider-Man film.
Yeah, it's like, for those of you who have seen Thor Ragnarok, it's like the Hulk in there. So he's just going to be in there supporting the main character. The cost for this brokered piece was 25%, with Disney putting in around 25% of the production budget for the third Spider-Man flick, and thus getting 25% of the profits. I believe they also maintained the merchandising rights. So they did make quite a bit more money, however, not as much money as they originally wanted, which was half.
Right, yeah. Right. But I still think it's fair that Sony gave them a bit more, but not as much as they wanted. But
yeah. I think Sony was a little desperate to keep Spider-Man in there, but they couldn't give away the farm, so to speak.
No.
You know? I'm curious to see what happens after this deal ends, where Spider-Man will be at. But, you know, we had 2 years, so I can wait.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, our second bit of news is Jingle Ball will be Monday, December 9th, 2019 at the Xcel Energy Center. Tickets go on sale October 11th. And the featured performers for the Twin Cities include Katy Perry, Camila Cabello, 5 Seconds of Summer, Why Don't We, Lauv, and Monsta X. And then our next bit of news, which I'm very proud of, is in partnership with Hot Topic, the Supernatural cast created an End of the Road shirt that fans could purchase to celebrate the final season. And all the proceeds would go to Random Acts, which is a charity co-founded by Supernatural star Misha Collins. The goal was to raise $5,000, but they actually raised $280,000. And Random Acts put the money toward Hurricane Dorian relief. And the 15th and final season of Supernatural premieres on October 10th on the CW. Now, I have to say I'm very proud of the Supernatural cast and crew for always being involved in charity work and doing this. And I'm also proud that they've made it 15 seasons, and I'm very sad that it's ending, but all good things must come to an end. But, Reed, in order to celebrate, I have brought in Supernatural trivia questions.
No way.
Yes way. And we're going to play them right now. Okay, so here, you take half the stack. Here you go. Okay, so just to say, Supernatural has its ups and downs as a TV show, but I still hold it very dear to my heart. I have watched it since it started, and Reed has watched through season 11. And I think these questions only go through season 11. It was from a Trivial Pursuit game that came out a few years ago, but we're just going to go for it. Some of them might be ridiculously hard. Some of them might be easy, but we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. All right.
So, Reed, go ahead and ask away.
Ask away. All right. I'm like, do I want to go super specific or do I want to go? That's what I'm trying to think of.
I don't know.
All right, I got one.
Okay.
All of the following Winchesters have been to hell, aside from which one? John, Mary, Dean, or Sam?
I'm trying to think just like in the show itself, which of them have we seen in hell? I'm going to say Mary has not been.
Mary has not been to hell.
Nice.
Congratulations. Woo. Mary has not been to hell. All right.
She low-key died, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Reed, what are the names of heaven's four archangels?
Ooh.
This is technically a theology question, too.
Yeah.
A Christian theology.
Thomas.
Yeah.
let's see. There's Michael, Gabriel, Raphael. Oh,
and one more.
Oh my goodness, is
the big guy?
Isn't Michael?
You said Michael?
Yeah, Michael's the big one.
Michael's like the ruler of heaven.
Yeah. Oh, what is it? What is it?
Come on, you got it.
No, tell me. I
Lucifer.
Lucifer is what?
Yes.
Oh, he's a four. Oh my god.
He is the fallen archangel.
Okay.
It's okay. All right, your shot.
Alrighty. This is, okay, oddly specific. And what year was Dean born?
1979.
Oh my God.
Easy. What? Sam was born in 1983.
That's wild. I never would have gotten that.
No, yeah. Okay, because they were. Dean was 26 in the first season, and Sam was 22. And I think the actors are like the exact same ages as their characters.
That's wild.
I think, yeah, I believe. Okay. Right. What job does Sam take while Dean is gone in purgatory? This is a season 8 question.
Oh my goodness. Well, I knew he was, I know he was studying as a lawyer before the show started.
When he was in college.
I don't believe he went back to that. He went back, he went to do some manual labor?
Mm-hmm.
Question mark?
Kind of.
Carpenter?
He was working in a motel. But what was he doing for the motel?
That's really weird. Is he a, is he a clerk? Is he a janitor?
No. Well, close-ish.
He's a bellhop.
No, he was like a maintenance dude. So he'd just go around and
that is a
fix
sad
it.
Life.
His brother was in purgatory.
I'd rather be in purgatory.
No.
Purgatory was brutal. But we did get to meet Benny, the vampire.
I liked Benny.
I liked him too. He was cool.
Past tense, he dies.
Rip Benny.
Everyone dies. I have
yeah,
some
that's not a spoiler
that,
alert because everyone dies. Even Sam and Dean die. That's not a shock. And they come back multiple times.
Yes.
So don't worry.
Emotionally
right.
numb at this point.
Not surprised.
All right, should we do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more.
All right.
Make it a really hard one. Let's see if I can get it.
Yeah, I want to see if you get this one.
Okay.
Who is unleashed on Earth when the Mark of Cain is removed from Dean's arm?
Easy. Amara, the darkness, God's sister.
Oh, my goodness. All right, how's this? More specific.
Okay, do it.
This is the last one.
Okay.
Chuck Shirley, also known as God. First
Spoiler alert. Wait, hold on. I spoiled that for my roommate. She'd never seen it, and we were watching it back, and it
was
like...
I was so happy it was Chuck.
It was
like six
seasons before they tell you that, and I was like, oh, yeah, so God. And she's like, he's God? And I was like, oh, my gosh, I just spoiled it.
That was good. I like that.
I did like that as well. Also, him coming into season 15, whack. Just saying.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Let's see. Chuck Shirley, also known as God, as we've just discussed, first appears in what season 4 episode?
Season 4 episode. Title name?
Yes.
Like, season 4 was... Oh! I think it was... Oh, it was episode 18! Oh, no! What's it called? Monster something.
You're really close.
Am I really?
Yeah.
The monster at the end of this book.
Oh my God, you got it.
Yes!
You actually got it. I never would have remembered that.
I'm not embarrassed to say that I know that.
My gosh. All right. Well, there you have it, guys. Maddie's clearly a bigger fan of Supernatural than I am, although I am a nice fan of Supernatural.
Yeah, I can't deny that I've watched that show multiple times.
It's all right. I've seen quite a few episodes multiple times.
Yeah, it's fine.
Well, guys, thank you for tuning into The Medium, and we'll see you next time.